Hey everybody, this week we're talking about Stranger Than Fiction.
Hit the music!
Everybody, I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty.
And this is Flaherty's on Films, a podcast about the coolest movies ever. Fans have suggested a new list for the AFI Film Institute. Did I say that right?
Sure. So we put a call out to the fans of the show and we're like, hey, what are some movies you think should be in the AFI? We gave them some criteria, but then our super cool friend Justin was like, hey, forget all that criteria. Here's a movie I kind of like, but my wife doesn't like. So I need you to settle this for us. And we're like, yes.
Perfect.
And that's why we're doing Stranger Than Fiction. Michael, why don't you tell them what it's about?
An IRS auditor suddenly finds himself the subject of narration only he can hear. Narration that begins to affect his entire life. From his work, to his love interest, to his death.
I really like that description. Spot on, IMDb.
That's a great description. I could not do a better job.
What were your initial impressions of the film?
Thought it was all right. It's kind of fun. It's kind of cute. And that's basically it.
Yep. I liked it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Anyway.
Don't love it.
Okay. Should we do Aaron and Justin's defenses of the film? Or should we do our first segment?
Your pick. You decide.
Let's go to Aaron and Justin.
Okay.
So we'll start with Aaron, who does not love the film. I'll read hers and then you can read Justin's, but you gotta get into cool guy mode. Can you be cool enough to
sure, you're saying Aaron's not a cool guy?
I'm just saying you gotta be cool guy. Okay. I'm already cool enough to be Aaron.
Got it.
I'm so lying, but it doesn't matter. Stranger Than Fiction utilizes magical realism, which I am totally here for. I'm with you, Aaron. I love a world that is 98% normal and 2% magical. So I found the premise of this extremely charming. I do like the love story, especially when Will Ferrell buys the flowers, but it's spelled like F-L-O-U-R-S. We'll get into that later. The entire premise builds up to the ending and how the book will end. After reading the manuscript, Will Ferrell decides he has to die because it's the only way the book can end, and it's such a great book. Here's the problem. Are you ready, folks? It isn't a great book. We've all been sitting here listening to the narration for 2 hours, and I would call the book average at best. This is one I wouldn't buy. I'd wait for the library copy, which certainly means it isn't worth someone's life. The movie's like standing in a line at an amusement park for 2 hours, and you get to the front of the line to see it's a dumb ride you've ridden 100 times before. 2 stars.
Whoa. Here's Justin's take. I'm trying to be cool.
Okay.
Movie reviewing not really being my thing. I guess I should start by saying that Stranger Than Fiction is a veritable cinema masterpiece. Okay, not really, but it certainly is an exciting movie deserving of more attention. I think the main premise that Harold's life is suddenly being narrated is a novel idea.
Novel.
Really, the puns just write themselves. Things I think that are great in this movie, the cast, Will Ferrell is in a non-traditional role for him, is likable and relatable and still gets a chance to be understatedly funny. Ferrell and Dustin Hoffman have an unexpectedly great chemistry. Emma Thompson, who I admittedly mix up for Tilda Swinton, and Queen Latifah have some great interaction too, and the relationship up and downs with Maggie Gyllenhaal seem genuine. Plus, I think Maggie made me think about having a thing for ladies with a tattoo sleeve. I won't talk about cinematography. Don't think there's much of a note in this movie, but it is also something I know little about. The plot itself. I think that this is just a clever idea that could have been very stupid, and instead it's done very smart, very human. Knowing that you're going to die, how do you react? What do you do if you realize it is inevitable? How do you spend your time? We get to see Harold go from trying to save himself to accepting his fate and living his best life, and finally, with the chance to avoid his death, he instead chooses a meaningful sacrifice. Plus, lots of Spoon on the soundtrack, which is fantastic, and Tony Hale with a bit part. Not very good at this. Maybe one of you will be able to express better why this movie is good, or maybe it sucks, and I can regulate it or relegate it to guilty pleasures like National Treasure.
Oh, boy. Well, good thing we're movie experts, so we can tell him exactly how he should feel about this movie.
He's deferred, the real judgment to us, which I very much appreciate. But first, why don't we go to our first segment, which is BAM.
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some really cool, really in-depth facts about this movie. Sam, take it away.
She's going to go on forever. So
on and on, let me tell you. So as I was telling these two before we started recording, this film was a little hard to research because, as Justin kind of pointed out, it's kind of an unknown. It's kind of one of those smaller hits of a film. So there aren't a lot of articles about behind-the-scenes facts and kind of how this movie got made. In fact, when I was Googling it, the first thing that came up for Stranger Than Fiction facts was 25 mind-blowing facts that are Stranger Than Fiction. Which
what
is
are they?
Interesting. China has banned time travel in films.
Huh. Why? What's the motivation there?
It offends their culture, I guess. Sure. The shortest war in history lasted a little over 38 minutes.
Huh. Oh, what war?
The Anglo-Zanzibar War that was fought between
probably
Britain
the
and the Zanzibar.
I just my guess.
How many people died?
I don't know. Shit. It lasted between 38 and 45 minutes and it is the shortest recorded war of all time.
Damn.
It probably wasn't cute like it sounds. Probably was horrifying.
It's not like an adorable war. Probably no. Not. Shit.
Well, Anglo-Zanzibar sounds fun, but
true.
It's probably...
I love Zanzibar ice cream.
That's all I could think of was Zanzibar chocolate ice cream.
It's probably horrifying imperialist oppression. Anyway, yeah. What's your next fun fact?
Chocolate ice cream's really good at least. Yeah, so... We're continuing with it. It rains diamonds on Saturn and Jupiter.
Ooh.
Wait, really?
I guess so. Huh. Researchers from NASA speculate that it's raining diamonds on Jupiter and Saturn. New atmospheric data from the two planets have shown that carbon is plentiful in its glaring crystal form.
That sounds
lightning
beautiful
storms
and
transform the methane into soot, which solidifies into bricks of graphite and then diamonds as it falls.
I feel like this is a part of Jupiter Ascending, that Wachowski film.
Did you watch that?
No, but I'm imagining a film called Jupiter Heist. And that's probably what that movie is. I've never seen it.
There's a 90s hit called with drops of Jupiter in her hair.
That is what they're referring to.
Just diamonds?
Yeah.
It's pretty basic.
Pretty basic.
So needless to say, researching a film called Stranger Than Fiction's brought up a lot of interesting facts, but not too many about this film. So apologies for this week. But let's begin. You were accompanied by a voice narrating your life as you live it, and what if you were the only person who could hear that voice? These were the questions that Zach Helm and Clarence Helmis started wondering that would eventually become the basis for the film Stranger Than Fiction.
And they were like, whatever it is, the voice has to be British, which I get.
Has to be Emma Thompson. Be specific. Come on.
I mean, there's a lot of great British actors who I think would... Olivia Colman
would
be good.
Question for you two, actually. If you had to have someone narrate your life, who would you want?
Can it be alive or dead?
Yeah, sure.
Because Alan Rickman would be really fun.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Because he has a really good voice. I'm pretty shallow.
That's
don't,
a good reason.
Don't worry about it.
I was trying to think of someone with a Russian accent. Might be good.
Sure.
I feel like your life would sound much more aggressive than it actually would be.
There we go. That's right.
Can you do a Russian accent?
Not at all. Can't even begin to
get
imagine.
Into the kitchen, get some vodka.
Imagine my whole life. Be like that.
Pretty amazing. So the final question to create the major conflict was, what if that voice said that you were about to die? As Helms would later state, there's something very poetic about the understanding of one's place in the universe, but it's far more dramatic when such understanding occurs only days before that life ends. Helms would write a story with the title of it, inspired from Lord Byron's Don Juan. Specifically, the quote, "'Tis strange but true, for truth is always strange, stranger than fiction. If it could be told, how much would novels gain by the exchange? How differently the world would men behold?"
What does that mean?
Life's weird, man.
Yeah, I think that's what it means.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's beautiful.
Beats, get your head out of the book. Look at the clouds. I think that's what that means.
There are a lot of references in this movie, like... the book that Emma Thompson is writing is called Death and Taxes, which is from a very famous Benjamin Franklin quote.
The only things in life that are certain are death and taxes.
Yes. So Lord Byron and...
Why is that a significant reference? Sounds like you could just reference anything. It's like, oh, reference.
That's what referencing is. What's
but
your
usually
point?
You do it for like a reason. Like, it's Ben Franklin would be maybe relevant to the story.
Because, yeah, it's the certainty in this life of death and taxes of the IRS auditor. So it's two
okay,
death and
how
taxes.
About this?
Well, that's an answer to my question.
Argument here. Yeah, so the only things you can't escape are death and taxes. But both of these things were escaped in the movie.
Mm.
Taxes weren't paid, death didn't happen.
See, that's a good answer.
That's why she's the English major.
That's why.
Lord Byron and Ben Franklin weren't the only inspiration Helms would borrow from. Helms would name his main characters after famous mathematicians and scientists. So, for example, Crick is named after British molecular biologist, biophysicist, and neuroscience.
Of course.
Yeah, I knew that.
Pascal is named after a French mathematician and physicist. Eiffel is named after a French civil engineer and architect.
What did he do?
Escher is named after a Dutch graphic artist, and Hilbert
is... He did the stairs! Crazy stairs!
And Hilbert is named after a German mathematician. Speaking of Hilbert, the character Dr. Hilbert has 23 questions in his investigation of the narrator. This is a direct reference to Hilbert's 23 problems. In 1900, David Hilbert published 23 mathematical problems that have inspired and challenged mathematicians throughout the years, and to this day, not all of the problems have been resolved.
That's fun.
Very cool.
The filming of this movie took place in Chicago, and a lot of the scenes are in very famous Chicago areas.
This is not interesting at all, but Michael and I watched this together, and we couldn't figure out where it was, like, because a lot of it at first was kind of nondescript, and so I looked up in Chicago, and Michael's like, God damn it, I knew it was Chicago, and he was so mad at himself, and I could not figure out why.
Cool, because I was gonna say it out loud, and I just didn't, and then you said it. I was like, I could have said it out loud.
I just feel like the situation didn't warrant that much emotion.
No, that was exactly how much it warranted.
Anyway, it's definitely Chicago.
Which I knew.
While filming, Will Ferrell wore an earpiece that fed him Emma Thompson's lines. This way, his fellow castmates could react naturally to his seemingly non sequitur lines.
Oh, that is fun. I like that.
Good idea.
And just a fun little tidbit, the film that Harold sees in the theater after he's instructed to live his life is Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
I knew that one. I said it out loud. Remember,
nice.
Michael?
Yeah. See, that's not like me.
Stranger Than Fiction was released on November 10, 2006, and it would open at number 4, but it would only gross $53.7 million at the box office. Also, it wasn't a full
theatrical release.
Yeah, it was in many, many theaters, like 2000 some, but it was not a full. Even though its budget was only $30 million, it was considered a box office flop. That being said, it was very popular with the critics, who appreciated its themes, the performances, and its humor. And your final fact of the day, and also your question of the week.
Ooh.
How many Academy Awards was this film nominated for?
I have my guess.
I have mine too.
Zero.
Two.
Zero.
Ah!
It did have nominations for acting in Golden Globes and also the Saturn Awards and Broadcast Film Critics, but none for the Academy Awards.
Okay. And that was...
That was Bam.
Time for Sam.
Now we're going to do Critics Corner, where we hear what critics have to say about the film. I will start. This is from Bob Mondolo from the NPR. The actors and the filmmakers all take a more restrained approach than you might expect, keeping the humor gentle and the jokes mostly as literary as the premise.
Is that your NPR voice?
Yeah.
That's good.
Thank you.
I think that might actually account for it not doing that well at the box office, because I feel like I remember the trailer at the time, and I think it made it seem like a funnier movie than it was.
Mm.
And people,
how'd you market it?
You know, a little more garden statey. A little more
pretentious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would have made it better.
No, that would have made people like... People don't like not getting what they expect, all right?
Mm.
People don't like to be fooled or hoodwinked.
Anyway. Mine would just be like a mime, and he would just sort of act out the whole trailer. But in silence, and then he would cry at the end.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Vacuous, pretentious, and annoyingly predictable. You can tell how and when this movie is going to end long before the end actually comes. To top it all, Will Ferrell just can't play dramatic roles. But is this even drama? I guess Mark Foster and Zal Kelm just invented a new genre, the feel-good artsy film. I only wish I'd spent fictitious money on it.
I love that review, actually. Here's from Deborah Ross from The Spectator. There just isn't enough wit or style or verve to pull it off. It takes a great premise and then not only fails to run with it, but also fails to go absolutely anywhere with it at all.
Wow, Deborah. Harsh.
Deborah's harsh.
The characters in this movie made me ill. I didn't like to watch any one of them. Well, Queen Latifah was probably the most tolerable. Dustin Hoffman always uses the bathroom. Why do I want to follow these men into the bathroom and watch him drink coffee between each of his lines? He makes me literally ill. And the poor sap that doesn't have a life except to file papers and talk to Dustin Hoffman, why do I care if your hearing voice aren't going to die? Bad, bad writing, acting, directing, etc. Says Rom.
That's a typical Rom review. It's from Stella Papamashua. It's from the BBC. Instead of finishing with a bang, it peters out. But this existential yarn is still fresh and funny enough to justify taking 2 hours out of your life.
Nice. This movie is the equivalent of a person who says words like meta and postmodern a lot with no idea what it actually means, says Joshua Dick, Amazon reviewer.
Great review.
I remember when I told Michael, you, that that Aaron didn't like this movie. We were watching it and you're like, I know why. It's because there's a scene where Dustin Hoffman takes Will Ferrell to a coffee machine, but he has a coffee maker in his office. It makes no sense.
Oh, man. That's a good point. Just remembering how frustrating that is.
So, Michael, what are your favorite and least favorite parts?
I'm looking at the shared Google document, and I think my favorite part is the same as your favorite part. Emma Thompson brings a lot of seriousness to the film, and I really like it. And maybe that's why I dislike Will Ferrell's performance. I think
Going to come around to that and agree heartily, so go on.
Because I think he's fine. You know, he's fun, and I think he is likable, certainly. But when Emma Thompson is on the screen, like, you really feel her despair that, oh, this character is real, and I'm going to kill him. And, like, oh, you just really believe it. Whereas Will Ferrell is slightly in the wrong movie, I feel like.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you said that because I agree so heartily. And the weird thing is, so this movie isn't really a comedy, but there are lines that make you laugh. And Emma Thompson is so serious, but some of her lines made me laugh more than any other lines in the movie.
Yeah.
And she was just so amazing. Like, yeah, the despair, the comedy, the torture art, like, it all came across so well. Her acting was incredible. She lit up every scene she was in. And yeah, I wanted to complain about Will Ferrell because I don't agree with people who are like, he's just funny and he should just be a funny man, because he was fine, but he just didn't bring the gravity of performance.
Wait, but that's what I would say. He's a funny man. Stick to funny.
Oh, you would say that?
I would say that. But I do like him. I like him a lot as a funny actor.
Oh, okay. So just stick to comedy, man.
Because I like it.
Yeah. Just be Anchorman, stupid.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, because I didn't buy him being tortured about accepting whether he should die or not. And I really didn't accept him having sexual chemistry with Maggie Gyllenhaal at all. I thought it was kind of gross. He looked like her dad. Like that. Yeah. There's a scene where she just like throws herself at him because she just like is overcome with passion. And I just do not feel it at all.
But like, if it was a comedy, I feel like he'd be doing a good job. Like some of the lines was like, I think there's a voice. Like, the way he says it is actually, to me, kind of funny.
Yes.
But then it's like, but I actually think we would like it if it was more serious, I think.
I agree with that.
So, that's my favorite part, is Emma Thompson.
Yeah, my very least favorite part is actually just the romance. At least they could have gotten someone a little more age-appropriate. Because I've actually never seen a movie ever where Will Ferrell had good sexual chemistry with anyone. So
but usually
least
that's funny.
Right.
Like him and Anchorman, like obviously Christina Applegate. Like,
right.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Not there yet. I think my least favorite part, well, it's either this, which was Aaron's point, that the actual book. So in the lore of the movie, we are hearing the book that Emma Thompson is writing. And the book sounds awful. Like,
I think the book sounds adorable. It sounds like a book I would really like, but I am not a literary person.
Chapter one, a guy is kind of boring and sad. Chapter two, he goes, lives his life. Chapter three, he dies. Like, okay.
Oh, actually, we should talk about that a little more because, so first of all, I just thought it was like cute where he'd be like, and then he did the single Windsor knot and his tie always thought it made him look fat. And it's just very cute, right?
It's
a cute book. But then we, so Dustin Hoffman talks about how this is one of his favorite authors, but at the end, she always kills her character. And it feels like, how are you like this great author if you have a gimmick? Right?
Right. And the gimmick is like how they die.
Yeah. That's how.
So they fall like a really elaborate traps, maybe.
Right. So, spoiler alert, at the end, she doesn't kill him. And it's like, I know it's not as great, but it feels like subverting your audience's expectation could actually make a better book than what you were making originally.
But maybe my least real fit, my real least favorite part, maybe I just think of this now, so maybe I'm wrong about this, is that the writers came to this with like, whoa, what if you knew you were about to die? And I'm walking away from the film, I don't feel like, well, he knew he was about to die, so he kind of just like was more adventurous and then he did a sacrifice. Like, I don't feel like, whoa, we really went on a journey where we explored the nuances of that question.
I feel like if we saw the exact same movie with the exact same scenes with a better actor, you would have felt it more. Like someone really feeling the pains of going out of his...
I want Tim Robbins to be in this role.
Right. Like Tim Robbins, he lives for the mundane and he lives for his routine and really stepping out of that. Maybe. And seeing a change in him and then falling in love and really not wanting to die, but realizing he'd give his life meaning that way. If you could just see it more, if you could just feel it more.
What makes me upset now, my real life favorite part, Robin Williams was still alive. He would have been perfect.
I think he would have been a little old.
Well, I mean, you could age up Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Right. You could have just had an age-appropriate person, I guess.
Yeah. That would have been good.
He's a very good serious actor.
And funny.
Yes. Wouldn't he be a little too funny in the funny parts?
Maybe. so we've covered it. So now we're going to just go to walk through the film a bit. I will start. Harold Craig, played by Will Ferrell, an agent for the Internal Revenue Service, is a lonely man who lives his life by his wristwatch. He is assigned to audit an intentionally tax-delinquent banker, Anna Pascal, played by Maggie Gyllenhaal, to whom he is attracted. On the same day, he begins hearing the voice of a woman omnisciently narrating his life as if he were the main character in a novel, but is unable to communicate with it.
I don't feel like I said enough how much I really did enjoy the narration bits. I thought they did that really well. Like
yeah,
him discovering the narration and him like trying to test it out and her voice is great.
The reason I don't like really give it too much props because like it's a thing where maybe that would make a really good short film. Like, but that's the whole movie.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's still good. I agree with you.
I just always was very entertained and I really liked it. And I liked his performance. The comedy of his I like is usually really broad, like Elf and Anchorman. So I was surprised that he could be kind of more quietly funny in those moments. I thought he did really well. So just because I was crapping all
his performance.
I still
think Tim Robbins taking this seriously would have been even funnier.
Or Robin Williams.
Or Robin Williams.
Because he would take it to a 10. He doesn't do quietly funny very well.
Is he quiet in his serious movies?
Sure.
Maybe. Maybe he's a bad choice.
Harold's watch stops working and he resets it. Using the time given by a bystander, the voice narrates, "Little did he know that this simple, seemingly innocuous act would result in his imminent death." See, this is why I think I'm not literary. I thought that line was so cool. But then when they repeat it later, I'm like, maybe I'm a hack because it seems a little cliche.
Why did you like it?
I just loved it.
Why?
I don't know why I like good writing. I don't know if I'm smart enough to.
I mean, why did you associate this as being good writing?
Well, I'm just saying, I don't know. I just like the vocabulary. I just like the way the sentence flows. Simple, seemingly innocuous is a really nice turn of phrase, don't you think?
I agree with that, yeah.
Okay. Worried by this prediction, Harold consults a psychiatrist who attributes the voice to schizophrenia.
Logically.
Well, yes. Though they consider that if there was really a narrator, he should visit an expert in literature. Crick visits Jules Hilbert, played by Dustin Hoffman, who I also thought did a very good job in this film. So Crick tells him a story. When Jules recognizes aspects of a literary work in Harold's story, he encourages Harold to identify the author first by determining if the work is a comedy or a tragedy. I couldn't tell. Okay, so he comes in, he's like, "All right, you're just crazy." And then he says that phrase. He's like, "Oh, little did he know, you must be literary." I couldn't really tell if he didn't really buy it, but he just thought this would be fun. Which
yeah,
I guess is realistic.
One thing that I don't like about this movie is that it keeps bringing this up, like, oh, is your life a comedy or a tragedy? And that kind of reminds me that I don't think this movie is that funny as a comedy or that interesting as a drama. So
So you wish the movie hadn't made such a point of it, because it made you think about that?
Like, oh, shit. As Harold audits Anna, the two fall for each other when Harold refuses to accept cookies that Anna made for him because they could be viewed as a bribe. Anna tells him to leave, making Harold believe his story is a tragedy.
But, like, why is she attracted to him?
And, like, you shouldn't bribe IRS agents.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's okay to follow. It's, like, not because he's so square. on the advice of Jules, Harold spends the next day at home trying to control his destiny by doing nothing. But his apartment is partially demolished by a wrecking crew that mistook the building for an abandoned one.
If you had to just sit around doing nothing so your life's narration wouldn't go forward, would you watch Animal Planet?
I mean, that sounds nice.
What would be the nothing you would watch all day?
I mean, things I'd want to watch wouldn't qualify as nothing, right? If I wanted to watch The Sopranos.
Oh, so you're like, that's too much action?
Yeah. So
it'd have to be something a little more...
I'd watch the extravagant house show on Netflix where they just go through fancy people's houses.
Ooh.
That's actually very exciting. I don't think that's a little
too much... Damn it, too much narration.
The hosts have they have good chemistry. It's really good.
Anyway, Jules believes
they'll have like three stories of pools, and they're like,
"What? How?"
I know. Really good show.
Too much action, Michael.
Can we stop this podcast?
So that's the second swimming pool.
That's the second swimming pool on the roof.
Jules believes that since Harold cannot control the plot, he should accept his impending death and enjoy whatever time he has left. Harold takes the vacation for work, develops his friendship with his coworker Dave, fulfills a dream of learning to play the guitar, and apologize to Anna, begins dating her. I don't know why. I kind of liked the smallness of his, like, oh, I'm about to die, so I'm not going to travel the world. I'm just going to learn to play guitar.
That's nice. That's nice.
And just hang out with one friend. I don't know why I liked that.
Who has, like, a very strange apartment.
So weird. Like, super 60s modern.
Art deco, is that what they call it?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Harold reassesses his story as a comedy. When he returns to Jules with this revelation, Harold inadvertently identifies the voice in his head from a television show as the author Karen Eiffel, played by Emma Thompson. I thought that was really hammy that he was watching the morning show earlier, and we're like, okay, that's gonna come up again.
You're the only one who said that.
Oh, really?
I didn't think that at all.
Jules, an admirer of Karen's work, reveals that all of her books feature the main character's tragic death.
Do you ever think of Eiffel 65 when you hear Eiffel?
Is that the Blue Abadie song?
Now, I was going to say.
Now, listen up.
Here's the story. You got it. About a little guy that lives in a blue world. We'll just sample that in. Karen struggles from writer's block and researches the ways to kill a character, Harold, to complete her next book. Which, this book does not sound good, right? If it's just like, how does he die? Like, maybe you should be researching meaning or characters. I don't know. I'm not an author. Her publisher sends an assistant, Penny. Oh, we're not very far in the movie. Her publisher sends an assistant, Penny Escher, Queen Latifah, to ensure the book is complete.
Well, I kind of went a little out of order.
Gotcha. Harold finds Karen through her tax records. Wait, yeah, Harold finds Karen through her tax records. When Karen learns that Harold experiences everything she writes, she is horrified by the thought that her books may have killed real people.
God, but just watching Emma Thompson act through that, like, her, like, shaking of thinking of that she had killed real people was really
it's
compelling.
Really good. It's makes the writing and everything seem like when Will Ferrell is like, it's kind of not that great of a film, and when Emma Thompson's on the screen is like, oh, good premise, good writing, you know what I mean.
I did forget, even though the romance is my favorite part, I do agree with Aaron that when he brings her a box full of different flowers,
can I tell my
for
bit?
Cooking flowers, yes,
you're like, why are these flowers all wrapped up? Like, I don't. So she has to unwrap the flowers? I'm like, Clean, it's like baking. You're like, sure.
Flower. There's two different kinds. I thought they were like maybe seeds or something.
I know what you thought. I know what you thought. You told me.
Because you were like, that's so cute. I'm like, I don't have it. That seems like a lot of work.
Just have it unopened. That's what I would do.
It's very cute.
Where are we at?
I don't know. She tells Harold she wrote a draft of his death, but has not typed it up yet. The events of the book manifest when she strikes the period key. Penny suggests Harold read the drafted ending to get his opinion. Harold cannot bring himself to read it, and he gives the manuscript to Jules to review. My God, so I think the point of the book, again, I am not a literary person, but it's supposed to be about a guy who's like hasn't really lived his life at all, and finally he breaks and starts to live and then dies instantly, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, that's what I said, though. My problem isn't that that's not what happens. It is what happens, but like that's all that happens.
But I
guess one day he was boring, the next day he was not boring. The end. And then he dies. The end.
I think like, there's a lesson.
So undeep.
It's about how you should live your life.
The simplest lesson possible, yeah.
All right.
Oh, see how when he was adventurous, he had fun? So, I mean, you could take from that what you want.
You folks at home cannot see how Michael just cocked his head all the way to his right shoulder when he said that.
I mean, when he was boring, he was not happy. But wait, well, look at him now. He's having fun.
I feel like
is
I
that
wanna,
a smile?
I feel like I
want to
defend that because that's the kind of fiction book I would write. I don't know anything.
So like, yeah, it is making that point. That's not what I'm arguing against.
All right. I mean, we didn't get to read the book. Maybe it's amazing.
Yeah, maybe it's the best book ever.
Jules confirms it's excellent, labeling it as Karen's masterpiece. Masterpiece!
Oh, so it is good. Never mind.
Okay. Harold's death is integral to its genius. Though Harold is distressed over his fate. See, is he distressed? He doesn't seem that upset about to die.
Tim Robbins would have sold that for sure.
Jules comforts him by stating the inevitability of death. This one death at least will have a deeper meaning, which I actually kind of like as a conceit, but I do get where you and Aaron are coming from on the goodness of the book.
Maybe, but even if it was a great book, I mean, I still would just philosophically, even if it's great art, it's still not worth a person's life.
Yeah, there are a lot of books.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot to do. You could watch Netflix, you watch house shows. There's a lot of
So why would you have three stories of pools? It just seems so wasteful. Are they different kinds of pools?
No, like, they're same kinds.
Well, then why?
For extravagance.
Okay. Harold reads a manuscript, returns it to Karen, telling her the death she has written for him is beautiful and she should keep it intact. He spends one last night with Anna.
We have two more paragraphs. Next day, Harold prepares to return for work despite Karen's voice narrating as she types up her ending.
Oh my God. Sorry. I loved that part. Emma Thompson's acting while she's typing the ending is so good. And she's like, she's barely doing anything.
Yeah. I feel like if Will Ferrell was bringing his game, he'd also, I mean, he's about to die. You would see it in his face. But
you don't at all.
Not at all. Because Harold's watch is 3 minutes fast, owing to the imprecise time given to him weeks earlier, he reaches the bus stop early and watches as a young boy falls in front of the oncoming bus. Karen continues writing. Harold leaps from the curb and pushes the child out of the way, but is struck by the bus instead. Karen cannot complete the sentence confirming Harold's death. And Harold wakes up in hospital, injured but alive. He learns that fragments of his wristwatch blocked the right ulnar artery in his body after the collision, saving his life.
Which I really, I don't know why, I mean, the book sounds cute, and this sounds like a cute tragic ending, where it's like, he was about to die, nah, his wristwatch died. It's like, that seems in keeping with the tone of the book that we have come to know.
I don't know who you're arguing against. I'm not arguing that the book isn't cute.
It's adorable.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Why can't great literature be cute?
You're right. That's a good point.
There's just a bit. Okay. Or when Jules reads Karen's final manuscript, he notes the story is weaker without Harold's death. Karen admits the flaws, points out the story was meant to be about a man who dies unexpectedly, but Harold actually sacrificed himself knowing he could have prevented his death. The story would have lost its tragic impact. In place of Harold, his wristwatch is the character who died tragically.
I'm thinking, though, what a twist for the audience. Like, oh, how is he going to die? He doesn't.
That's why
it's been,
that's
it's
what
been
I'm
11
saying
books.
About, you know, subverting expectations. Like, totally. Ed Nye Shyamalan not having a twist.
Totally. That's the biggest twist like there could be.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're double twists. That's what she could do. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Now we're going to go to our next segment, which we call
Baroka.
Why don't you do it?
Okay. Call John Flaherty.
Calling John Flaherty. Mobile.
Not like I have his work number. Why did they tell me that? Now listen up. Here's the story
about a little guy that lives in...
John Flaherty.
Hey, John. You're on a little show called Flares on Films, and we're talking about Stranger Than Fiction. Have you seen it? What do you think?
I have seen it. I was interested, then I was confused, and then I was disappointed, and then I was confused.
What were you confused about?
Well, so the premise itself, once it gets going, is pretty straightforward. And they're like, oh, where are they going to go with this? Well, I think everyone watching that movie has thought more about the underlying mechanics of the movie's premise than the writer did.
Whoa.
And I still, Michelle wants
to. You don't think it's logical?
The only person who even tries to come to grips with what the hell is going on is Emma Thompson. Everyone else is like, oh, she's writing his life. Okay,
I actually
cool.
agree with that.
How off-putting is that? Also off-putting is the movie with Will Ferrell with a weird premise. And once the premise is revealed, he's like, it's like sort of a comedy bit where he's like yelling at the voice. And I'm like, I'm laughing. Michelle wants me to note I was intoxicated at the time, so I was really enjoying it, getting into it, because it looked like a comedy. And then it wasn't, and I was really confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
You don't like being confused?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It's magic, then. I mean, it's just not supposed to be real.
But nobody ever says it's magic. They all, like, are just, oh, yeah, she controls his entire life, and what she writes will happen. Uh-huh.
I was okay with that. That never bothered me.
How does that not bother you? That was so stupid.
It's magical realism.
Yeah, it's pretend.
Anyway, so what grade do you give it?
I was entertained, particularly Dustin Hoffman's character entertained me, even if he didn't make any sense. I think I'd give it a C-.
Wow, C-.
I also think whoever put this on the AFI thinks it's way more clever than it actually is.
Oh, John, Justin put this on because Justin and Aaron disagree on whether they like this film or not. He didn't think it belonged in the AFI.
Justin, I love you, man. You're wrong.
Wow. You're wrong. Wow. John, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Whoa, Colleen, what grade would you give this film?
So, despite us just constantly complaining about it, I really enjoyed this film a lot.
Whoa.
I kind of like the conceit of the film. I also agree with Justin. I like Spoon very much. But I also agree with Aaron about the book maybe being a bit. But more that it's just gimmicky. So,
I like gimmicks.
But would maybe preclude it from being her masterpiece, her great literature, her 11th book that someone just dies.
Were any of her books good? We don't know.
Well, apparently they were because we were told.
Apparently they were great. What do you give? What grade do you give?
I give it a B, which is high because I just really enjoyed it. At the end, I was like, I like that movie. So,
yeah.
I feel like it's such a cop out to agree with Justin and Aaron, but sorry. Yeah. The fight lives on in their household because we did not solve it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm going to give it a B-, but I'm going to fall back on my reasoning that there's some jokes, but it's not that funny. There's some drama, not that dramatic.
I'm not a slave to genre like you are. I don't care about that.
I'm not talking about genres. I'm talking about emotions.
Oh, okay. You need more emotions.
Yeah, I like to feel things.
Fair. I guess there were just some parts of this movie I liked so much that it made up for a lot of the weaknesses in the movie for me.
What were the parts you liked?
The narration parts and Emma Thompson's performance.
Yeah, those are good bits.
Yeah. And the flowers. Once I figured it out. Once I had it explained to me what was happening on screen, I really enjoyed that part.
But I think B- is good. That's a good grade.
Sure. Who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by Dole.
Dole. Like bananas.
Like bananas, yeah.
Bananas are so good for you. And you guys, they're
bullshit.
So
bullshit. Prove
cheap.
It.
Dude, I used to be like sick all the time, and now I'm the healthiest person you've ever met.
You're currently sick right now.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
It's an illusion.
Yeah,
because
sure.
I ate 6 bananas this morning, and I feel perfect.
You're like Gaston, but bananas. You're like the monkey Gaston. Do people say that about you a lot?
Wait, in that scenario, then like Gaston is
because he eats a lot of eggs, right?
Yeah.
But you're the monkey version.
Okay.
Did that make sense?
It made perfect sense.
Perfect.
It was so good.
Now, I think we're going to find out what our next movie is.
And our next movie is Avatar.
Whoa. We're going to go on a 3D adventure.
What? Things are going to be coming right at
us. We're going to ride the banshees? And we're going to
Banshees like a real thing.
And we're going to live in Pandora?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Remember that film, guys? It was the biggest thing in the world, and nobody remembers it.
And we're going to save the big tree?
The Navi?
I can't wait. What an adventure that'll be. Yeah, and cut.